This is the Something Beautiful podcast. I'm Jonathan Blundell. Thanks for joining us again for another episode. This week we talk with Jason Dukes. He is a recent author, just published the book Live Sent, and that's available on Amazon. But we talk about that idea of what it means to live sent and how, as a church, we should be living out our faith 168 hours a week versus the 2 to 3, maybe 4 hours a week we get together with other believers. And he talks about how he wrestles through that, how he's encouraging others to wrestle through that, and what it all means right here on the Something Beautiful podcast, Stories Worth Talking About. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Something Beautiful podcast. On the phone with me at a coffee shop in Florida near Orlando, we have Jason Dukes. He is a staff member at West Point Church. Website for them is westpointchurch.org. And so, Jason, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks a lot, Jonathan. Thanks for having me on.
Briefly, just tell our listeners a little bit about who you are.
Well, I grew up in New Orleans, Louisiana, and met my wife in college. We've been married now for a little over 11 years, and we have 4 kids, Caleb, who's 8, and Katie, who's 5. Abby's about to turn 3, and Ella will be 1 in December. So we've got a fun and busy household.
Sounds like.
We live about 10 minutes from the Magic Kingdom. In Orlando, Florida, and actually on the west side of Orlando, and we can see the Disney fireworks every night from the second floor of our house. So,
oh, nice! Very
we live
nice.
We live in a fun spot, so we're having fun. But I've done several things, but the main thing that I've done typically has been on pastoral team for a few church families, and back in April of 2002, we were asked to help start a church out on the west side of Orlando in a new developing area with a lot of new folks that were coming in and a lot of people that were determined to not be not just really connected with the love of Christ or the hope of Christ. And so we were asked to come out and help us start a church family out there and just begin to love and serve that community. And so in February of 2004, we did that, and we've been doing it ever since. And so we're real blessed to be a part of that. And we've done some other things as well, which we may obviously get into in the course of this, but that's kind of a brief summary of who we are.
Okay, good. So you grew up in New Orleans. For those of I guess most people know New Orleans for Mardi Gras, of course, Hurricane Katrina and stuff. But what was growing up in New Orleans like for you?
Man, it was a neat experience. I mean, my dad was a pastor of Inner City Church there. He also worked with the New Orleans Seminary, and so we had kind of a unique life. I mean, we lived in the Gentilly area of New Orleans, for those who are familiar with it, and did most of the ministry that we were a part of, and a lot of the people that we did life with were from the one of the areas in the north side of the Ninth Ward that was devastated by the industrial canal levee that broke during Katrina. Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty amazing, man, growing up. I mean, we were our church family was multiracial, and but we didn't think of it like that, to be candid with you. I can honestly say, I think growing up, I didn't think a lot about the fact that we were a multiracial church until I went to college in the Bible Belt. I had not heard that churches, you know, I didn't hear that term a lot about churches. Now you hear it a lot, but, you know, we just really grew up with that, and the church family was very outward focused, and, the school I was a part of was a neat school as well. And I think a lot of our time we spent hanging out, we spent serving people, we spent eating at great restaurants, which New Orleans is known for. And I did dig going to Mardi Gras and enjoyed the French Quarter and all the things you would imagine growing up there. But it was special. It was a unique experience in that I think I got to see my mom and dad and a lot of other people live out a daily expression of their faith in loving and serving people in their community instead of just something that's talked about once a week.
Mm-hmm. And now you mentioned one of the things that you said was you were doing life with these people. Was that a concept that you grasped at that time growing up, or was that something as you look back on, you say, wow, we really were living life together?
Well, I think I knew it at the time. I don't think I would have articulated it that way.
Okay.
It was something that we emphasized, our family emphasized to us, and trying to put the interests of others above your own. And you know, you celebrate with others and you mourn with others. But yeah, I think it became an emphasis as for my family and as a leader, for my personal family, my family now. And as a leader, probably just here within the last 8 or 10 years.
Mm-hmm. What was it specifically about your family or maybe even your faith that led you and your family at that time to be so involved in community, being involved with people of diverse backgrounds? Was there anything particular that you can remember?
You know, I think we really, when we moved to New Orleans, I was 2. When Dad became pastor of that church family, I was, 6 or 5. I can't remember which one, but I was 6. And so at a very early age, we just saw people giving themselves away. We saw love and life, mixed together. We saw faith and life mixed together. We saw those things lived out. And I think it really compelled us, and obviously mom and dad joined in, and I'm sure they did so many things that I never even noticed as a 6-year-old, but I think there was a compulsion early on because we saw the beauty even among people who you might consider impoverished or oppressed or walking through difficult times. We saw a beauty in their life as they lived so generously with each other, and so it really cultivated in us, I think, a heart to want to do that as well and to experience that kind of beauty.
Mm. So it sounds like it wasn't even necessarily someone in the church that brought that about. It was just the people in your community that were living that out naturally and seeing that example that kind of brought that about.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And I think especially since we helped to start West Point Church, we've seen that all over again. And it's no knock on people that are in church culture, but there's such a beauty for people who are not in church culture, maybe who aren't immersed in what sometimes is emphasized in kind of a performance-based faith, but it's just simply an expression of it lived out in love and service. And so, the beauty of those people's lives, I think, was very inspiring. Mm-hmm. We saw a lot of ugliness as well, and so the contrast was stark. When you see that kind of beauty and that kind of ugliness together.
Okay. So growing up, did you have dreams of being a pastor? I know growing up as a pastor's kid, you either have the, I'm going to be just like my dad, or I'm going to completely rebel and do my own thing. Was that ever a thought in your mind?
That's a great question. To be honest, from a pretty early age, I felt like what I saw my dad doing, I wanted to do for a lot of reasons, mainly because just of the way I saw him help other people become who they really were meant to be. And, you know, that was really neat to me. And you know, I growing up, I had such a unique kind of experience, like I said, because I spent so much time on the seminary campus, as well as in the actual community of New Orleans. And so I saw a lot of both. I saw a lot of people that lived out expressions of their faith. And like you just, in that question that you just asked, I saw a lot of my friends who didn't want to be like their dad
mm-hmm.
For whatever reason. But that wasn't me. I did. And the reason why is because both my dad and my mom listened to God and loved him and loved people in a very authentic way every day. So it sounds strange to say this, and I don't want to say that my dad didn't disciple me or speak to me about the things of Jesus, But as far as deep theological conversations, I think the first one I remember having with him was when I was 21 years old.
Hmm.
You know, he didn't sit me down and try to indoctrinate me as much as he tried to model a life of love and of putting the interests of others above your own. And we saw him and Mom actually listen and live out their faith in that way. And I think that because of how sincere that was, it made me and my brother both want to follow in their steps and follow mm-hmm. Christ as well.
Boy, that's a lesson in and of itself right there. I mean, we could wrap up the podcast and we'd have our theological thing for the day. just love it and live it out. I think that's vital. So I guess you went on to seminary. You said, sound like you left New Orleans and went elsewhere for seminary.
Well, I left New Orleans, went to college in Tennessee, Union University. And,
okay.
Really valued that experience, and then saw some things, even though my dad had been a part of a lot of church families that he had preached at, not necessarily led. He had led them prior to my being born, but in the Mississippi area, which would probably be considered Bible Belt,
mm-hmm.
I did see a lot of things firsthand in Tennessee, more of a Bible Belt area in contrast to what we had seen in New Orleans. And some of it was extremely beautiful, and some of it you're like, man, that just doesn't seem like the church would do that. And so that was a real neat lesson, a neat formative and learning time. And then met my wife in that course of that, and the friendships that I made with some of her friends in Orlando is what actually ended up getting us hired in Orlando. Somebody asked us if we'd come down to do student ministry down here, and so we did. So that, you know, that's kind of how we ended up down here. But I did end up going back to actually finish my master's degree from New Orleans Seminary.
Okay.
Just continued to feel compelled to do that. I did a little bit weird, though. After I graduated from Union, I stayed a year there because I was serving as student pastor with a church family in that area. And then I went for a year. I was thinking I was going to be there longer, but I went and stayed only a year in New Orleans. And then my wife and I got married. We ended up in being hired in Orlando, and then when we were asked to start West Point, which that wasn't the name of it, they just asked if we started church, but when they were asked to start a local expression of the church, I just said, you know, I don't think I'll finish my master's degree if we start this. I'll probably just let it sit on the shelf. So we moved back to New Orleans for a brief period and finished, kept our house in Orlando and did that, and then came back here and began to try to cultivate the starting of that local expression of the church. So,
okay.
So yeah, I ended up getting my MDiv over the course of a lot longer than most people, a lot more years than most people. But yeah, I did end up getting it also from New Orleans.
Okay. Now, when you first moved to Florida, coming on staff at a church to do student ministry, did you have any conflict, or did you wrestle with the church that you had seen growing up and maybe the church that you were at then, or was it a perfect fit as far as what you had experienced thus far?
And that's a great question, and I'll tell you why, because it was a bit of culture shock for me, to be honest. The particular church family, we were hired. It's really interesting. The guy who asked us to come down actually was assistant headmaster of a private school, and he wanted me to come. It was a private school connected with a church family, and he wanted me to come and be a campus minister in the high school to teach Bible, to coach basketball, and to lead, as he termed it, students on missional directive locally and globally.
That's a long title.
And so, yeah, it was interesting. So, you know, I don't know what the official title was, but that was the job description. And so, you know, I did that and really enjoyed it. I did it for 4 years, and that's how we hired her. I also did some college ministry at that time with that same church family, but you know, it was a bit of culture shock, though, a private school setting like that. You know, like, I'm not trying to name drop. I was really blessed to coach Payne Stewart's daughter. But, you know, he would be an example of someone that was at that school. And it's a great school. It really is. And we did some neat, we saw some neat things happen there among the students and in their lives. And so it was a lot of fun, but it was culture shock, I'll be honest. But I think God really used it to prepare us to help start West Point, because it's also out in the west side of town, a bit of an affluent area, which we didn't necessarily choose. Again, we were invited to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it was a bit of culture shock from what I grew up around. And so I think the time at the school helped us get a little bit acclimated to maybe the way that people think in that culture a little bit more than what I'd ever been exposed to.
Okay. So then as you're starting, I guess, with West Point, kind of dreaming up what you're wanting to see, what you're hoping to see, what's going through your mind? What's your vision?
Yeah, you know, that's back in when I was 19 years old, just to step back real quickly, I really felt like God said, man, you know, or put a dream in my heart, I should say, to pastor a church family that would give herself away. And even to the point of if it all dissolved, they gave themselves away so deeply. And to be honest, at that time when I felt him put that dream in my heart, I didn't really know what that meant. And I still don't fully know what that means. I think I've learned some things from both good and bad in the process. But what I began to do at that time was say, Lord, all right, I'm a team player, and so I'm a team player, and if I'm going to do this, I want to really understand your team and understand what you're about. And so I said, God, just what is church? You know, help me understand that. What do you value about your church? And about 2 months into that, man, I felt like the thing that kept going to my heart was that I was asking the wrong question, that church is not a what, she's a who.
Mm-hmm.
And that I don't need to be asking what is church, but who is church, and begin to build, let my paradigm be built from there. And so that journey began, and it continues. And so when we started West Point, we started it with the hope of helping people to quit going to church and instead be the church. And you might say, just what does that mean? You know, well, we still have a Sunday morning gathering, but that's exactly what it is. It's a gathering of the church. And so you don't go to church, you are the church. And in fact, the New Testament, 140 plus times that it refers to the church, not one is a place or an event. And yet the bulk of our language in North American church culture, it connects church to one of three prepositions, to two, to at, or to in. And so, but the New Testament doesn't. So, yeah, I think in order to really step back and say, Lord, what do you value about your church? We have to start maybe speaking of it and thinking of it apart from those prepositions. And so we said, all right, what we want to do is we want to try to help to cultivate a culture of people who follow Jesus and who see 168 hours of their week as being the church. And then this metaphor came to us that I think Jesus emphasized and Paul did as well. And it was the metaphor of live sent, L-I-V-E-S-E-N-T, live sent. And Jesus spoke of sentness, of being sent, that he was sent and now is sending us multiple times, especially in the Gospel of John. And then Paul picked up that metaphor in 2 Corinthians 3 when he said he was speaking of his credibility, backing up his credibility as a teacher and apostle and things like that. And he said, look, your very lives are letters of recommendation for us.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to send you recommendation letters or a resume. He said, in fact, your lives are a letter. Your very lives themselves are a letter because God decided not to write his message on stone tablets but on human hearts.
Wow. Yeah.
And so powerful metaphor. And so we began to tell our folks, man, we've got to live sent. Our lives are a letter. And we are a letter of hope and love. We're not a letter of religion from the perspective of how it's spoken of in North America today, but true religion from the perspective of how James wrote and how we simply love each other and love those who are hurting and who are oppressed, specifically widows and orphans and others, as he wrote it in James chapter 1. And so I think what we began to say is, Dally, so how do we love our family? How do we love our neighbor? And how do we love those in the marketplace, which we have a heavy emphasis in? How do we love local and global community? How do we even love online? Because almost, in fact, 100% of the people connected with our church family have broadband internet. And so many of them exist online, so as many people do today in North America. So, you know, I think, or in America. And so, you know, I think that began to be our very focus. So we began to say, all right, in those spheres of living, life's not dichotomized like that. It's not compartmentalized. But for the sake of explanation, here are five spheres that are significant in your everyday life. Live sent in those spheres. And that'll be the real story of the church. In fact, we're on a podcast now, but my teachings are not as important to podcast mm-hmm. as the real story of those people living sin in everyday life. That's the real story of the church. And so, you know, I think that began to be our emphasis and what we tried to really focus on and measure success by with our church family, and that's what we've done now for over 5 years.
Okay. Now, just to clarify, you said there were five areas that y'all were trying to really live out the idea of live sent.
Yeah, it was, and those were family, which mm-hmm. we think is primary. Deuteronomy 6 seems to indicate how significant that is. So family, neighborhood, you know, just simply loving your neighbor, right? That's a novel idea. And then in the marketplace, we're real big in marketplace because we think that the church for too long, what we tend to do with brilliant marketplace leaders is ask them to sign up to be an usher instead of really saying to them what you do in everyday life. It's kingdom important. It's of kingdom significance, and we want to resource you in doing that. So we do a lot of focus there. And in local and global community, which we sum up with the word world, but if you break down the word world, we say it's local and global community. And then on the web, online, is the fifth sphere. And, okay. and those are the areas that we try to challenge people to really listen in.
Very good. Now, one of the things that you mentioned was we continue to think here in our Western communities, Western mindset, that church is a place. And I see this a lot, especially online with Twitter and blogs and so forth, that people say, I had a good time at church, or I went to church, or I just finished church. Does that pain you to see that? It sounds like you're going completely contradiction to that.
Well, we're going against that for the sake of trying to just emphasize something that we think will hopefully provoke people to live sin. We don't sit around and get mad at people for saying that. I mean, that's become the habit of our culture, right?
Right.
Now, we are trying to help encourage people to reconsider that for two reasons. One, it's not semantics. It really isn't. People would argue and say, well, that's just semantics, Chase. No, it's not. It's a matter of emphasis. Mm. And if this is really a viable spiritual option that those who are seeking hope and are hurting would want to look into, they would want to look into something more than just something they add to their Sunday morning schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't speak of it in that way, then how do they really know it's a viable option? If we don't live it, secondly, if we don't then, because we speak of it, if every major subculture has its own language, right? Like if you're a Mac user, there are just things that you say that you know Mac users understand. If you're a Harley driver, there are things that you know that a Harley drivers understand. And those things really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so language, I think, is important. But I think even a modern day example, man, and I can give you one from the 20th century as well, but that's significant. But just let's look at Katrina, since we mentioned New Orleans earlier. It's really interesting to me that the church families that stressed being the church in some form, now they may not have used that language, but they were actually being the church, and they didn't just see Sunday morning as church. And by the way, let me give a disclaimer before I finish that. I don't meet many people that actually would say Sunday morning is church, right? Do you?
Right.
In other words, if they really taught the scriptures, they would say the people are the church.
Right.
But then on their Twitter, they say, I was at church. Do you see how that's contradictory? And so it's philosophically, they would agree with everything you and I are saying right now. Pragmatically, that's not the case. And the bridge from philosophy to pragmatism is a very difficult one to build. And it would radically change our strategy and our ministry emphasis and our language emphasis if we did, and which probably would give us a greater impact in our world. And because I think the real movement of the church that Jesus really catapulted forward that we need to be a part of is about people living sin. It's about people living on mission, or just simply as he said in John 20, as I have been sent by the Father, now I'm sending you. If we would maybe focus our language a little bit, that would help. But mm-hmm. back to that story, you look at Katrina. You know, the church families that were being the church before Katrina, guess what? Almost all of them still exist.
Right.
The church families that really defined themselves by self-preservation of a campus or a building or an event, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're gone, literally. And you can ask anyone who's there in New Orleans who understands really the dynamic of what happened with the churches, and they would agree with that. And so it's just such a great modern day example of, if you took that away, and maybe it's a real good bottom line question for people to ask themselves, if the event of Sunday morning and the campus of their church family was taken away in a flood, would they still actually be, would what they were already doing still be meaningful, still matter in their community mm-hmm. after all that was taken away?
Mm-hmm.
And if the answer is no, then they are central to that campus and event, not to people living all 168 hours of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's I think that's why it matters, in my opinion.
Sure. Well, and I think I'm reading the book, the House Church book, right now.
Yeah.
And they make the point in there, you brought up that 168 hours, they make the point in there that we have 168 hours in a week, and yet the average Western American Christian only gathers with their church family 2 to maybe 4 hours a week.
Exactly.
And we expect that to make a change in their life. We expect that to make an impact, and we wonder why people live with sin for decades. It's like, well, because we come in, we sit down, we don't have any interaction with people, and we're only spending 2 to 4 hours out of that 168 hours with other believers.
Yeah. And man, what we're really stressing is we got to be doing life with each other so that mm-hmm. we can do life with those around us who need Christ, who are hopeless or hurting or searching or desire to be reminded of the purpose of why they're even here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Jesus, man, he said clearly, I came for the sick, not the well. And I think a lot of church culture, again, because we're so central around event or places, we forget that where we really are sent is out into the culture, the people that we walk with, that we work with, that we live by, and for some of us, even that we live with, right? And so, you know, that we really need to redefine our mission in that way.
Okay. Now, I imagine you're probably still wrestling with this, like hopefully everyone is, but this idea of lived sense, of lived communally, living life together, how have you seen this play out? I know that there's a couple ideas. You've got the House Blend Cafe, the restoration concept. What are some practical ways that West Point Church has found to live this out?
Yeah, you know, one, you mentioned we do a lot simply to encourage and resource guys that live in the marketplace to be able to be the church, to love people, to live sent there. And by that, just for those who might be listening, we certainly don't mean that we give them bigger Bibles to carry and they hit them people over the head with it. You know, if anything, they befriend people and actually listen to them and bring, and their lives are letters of hope and love to those folks. You know, we already do that anyway. And so we had some guys that began to get together and say, man, let's start doing life together in such a way that we create business concepts that gain credibility for two reasons. One, so that we can give profit back into the local community and all of our profit, you know, net profit. Obviously, you've got operating expenses, but that we give our net profit back into the community. And then secondly, that it might encourage other business leaders to review maybe how they really see their bottom line. And so that has happened, man. And so the cafe was a pilot element. That's now spawned other guys. Like, we just had a gentleman who was a CFO quit his job to start his own private equity firm for the sake of what I just said, that he's going to try to make as much money as he can so that he can give almost all of it away.
Mm.
And here's the way he puts it. It's really fun to listen to him. Let me say this, it's not just about giving money away. Doing life happens as a result of the business interactions that occur or the different projects that come out of those things. So Power Cafe, for instance, I mean, we've done life with so many people in our community on a deep level because we've simply looked outward instead of inward and to try to give ourselves away into the community. And so the life experience that's come from that has been beautiful, whether it's the people that would come into the cafe and they treat the general manager like he's their best friend, or, and their lives have been changed because of it, or because of the folks that actually began to do things together because of interaction from service or from life together at the cafe and things like that. But with this business stuff, we're seeing a lot of those things as well. You know, another way we've seen it lived out is we, for instance, with our church family, we don't do, the pastoral team doesn't sit around typically and dream up what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
if anything, we sit around and say, like, what are we hearing our folks say and how can we help them accomplish that? And so almost every project that's happened, as far as where we've seen life together happen, which has resulted in that life begetting life, right? Because only life can beget life. And so service happens as a result of these guys doing life together. Loving happens as a result of that. The church is lived out, if you will. And so these guys have come up with ideas. They have passions. They have things they see that are needs. And so people have done life together based around families who do life and learn how to parent together, but also around families who say, I have a similar passion for wanting to help the homeless or wanting to, you know, fill in the blank. And then we just combine that as a pastoral team and say, man, how can we help you do that? How can we communicate about that so that people can help resource it if you need it? Or how can we provide the resources that you need to help make that happen, or network you with somebody to make that happen? And so it just further cultivates their life together and the way that they're giving themselves away. And so, you know, those are examples of that. I think we've also seen a thing develop in our area that we cultivated for about 2 years called the Church of West Orange, where we basically began to look at other church leaders and say, man, let's start kind of forgetting about our own names and really just be the church together to West Orange County. And as we do that, instead of pointing people to West Point or to St. Paul's Presbyterian or to People of Faith Lutheran or to First United Methodist or whatever, you know, let's just point them to Christ ultimately, but also to know this is the Church of West Orange being the church together. And so we've seen that, man, over the last 9 months really begin to develop, and we've got a big meeting coming up next week where we'll set some priorities for next year. But the life together that's blossomed out of that has been so significant. And then on a larger scale for the state of Florida, there's a network that developed over the last 3 years that we've helped co-lead called ReproducingChurches.com. And it's just simply, very candidly, it's a network of church families that are committing to give themselves away together. And so we've seen so much blossom out of those relationships. And then, recently we just kicked off a website called humanitybeautiful.com, where we are trying to simply tell the stories of people. It's a Tumblr site, T-U-M-B-L-R. Mm-hmm. We're trying to simply tell the stories of people, similar to what you're doing, who are being beautiful, who are being what God meant for them to be. So so anyway, those are some things that have come out of that. But I mean, my favorite group to always tell stories about is a women's group that formed because some ladies just started hanging out together. And they have become probably the most, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a group of people who say they follow Jesus have the impact, the transformative impact in hurting and lonely lives as these guys have. And the women that they've walked with and connected with and done life with in a genuine way, as you said a while ago, more than just getting together for a Bible study, more than just, they've literally done life together, and the beauty that's come out of that has just been amazing.
Wow. Well, you know, and I picture the ideas of the business place and the commonplace, and one story that comes to my mind is we have a businessman in our church who runs, he's had several businesses, but now he runs a self-storage place. And our pastor actually offices out of one of the rooms there at his storage place. And he said, you know, he's told me several times that what's been amazing is just it's kind of become a community place for guys that he would have never met otherwise, but because they have a storage place there, they come in and they'll sit and talk for an hour and a half with him just because they need someone to talk to or someone to listen to. And he said, you know, then if the questions get too tough, I've got the pastor down the hall and I can call him in and talk. But he says, I have this great relationship now just because I have this self-storage place. And it's almost, he says it's like Cheers, you know, where everybody knows your name. And he said, guys just come in here and they'll hang out half the afternoon just because there's someone here that has a heart that cares. And that,
I mean, that to a T is almost a description of what the cafe has become, you know, because we didn't create it to be a toy for church culture. You know, we didn't do it so that other Christians would come hang out. We did it so that those who follow Jesus, whether they work there or they hang there, would have an opportunity to simply be there when people needed to talk or to meet others and to befriend. And And so we've seen a lot of that same thing, man. And just, it's really beautiful. It's really amazing. And it's amazing how people, I think a lot of times in church culture, people are hesitant to want, because we typically only define giving love like that, or people say evangelizing or whatever, by, you know, if you died tonight, would you go to heaven or hell, or questions like that. When Jesus seemed to simply be with people, he simply loved them where they were. He asked them more questions about who they were and what they might have hurt in. Mm-hmm. than he did about whether they had made some right religious decisions. So I think we're seeing some neat things blossom as a result of that.
Now, you mentioned, of course, growing up, that you really saw love lived out. You saw community lived out. Would you say that that's probably what's missing most from our churches today? And not to badmouth any particular group or anything like that, but do you think that that's why the church is in the shape that it's in? We don't have the people living it out.
I really do. I mean, I think a way that we phrased it is we think, for the most part, a lot of North American church culture has grown to become, to be more about self-preservation than about restoration. And man, those are not only antithetical, but self-preservation is, could be, not always, but could be synonymous with selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the antithesis of love, right? And mm-hmm. so I would say, yeah, I think that that is epidemic. And it's not that there aren't a lot of church families that are loving their communities. There are. But I think instead of being critical, maybe just look back at what Jesus said and say, hey, he said we would be known by our love for one another.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want something, and let's get, like, you know, even, and some people don't like the word mystical, and that's fine, but we have to be honest and know that we live in a culture where spirituality and mysticism is actually at a peak. I can tell you, in our context, it is, and people are looking for those options, and something really beautiful and mystical and very spiritual happens in an engaging and connective way when we genuinely love each other.
Mm-hmm.
It just does, man.
Well,
and people are gripped by that. And Jesus, what did he teach? He taught that in John 13, a new command I give to you, that you love one another, right? And this is how people will know that you are my followers. You're learning my ways. You're my disciple
mm-hmm.
if you love one another. So I think it needs to be paramount. It needs to be a priority for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that you made a good point there. It's, we don't need to be critical about those that aren't living it out. We just need to live it out ourselves. Because for me, it is very easy to be critical of the church, at least the church expressions that I've seen, and to say, look, they're not doing it right, and then just kind of give up hope. But my call is still to be an example, and I need to figure out what all this means, and then just be the example and just do it. Not worry what anyone else is doing or how they're doing or how they're not doing it, but just do it itself.
I agree, yeah. And man, you know, even if just a few of us, those who are listening, even if just those of us who would be tuned into this particular podcast and others who have like it, if we would just do that, man, I mean, you know, the whole planet, not to sound cliche-ic, right, but the whole planet was changed by 11 dudes that did that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So, you know, I think we just need to continue in that effort and in that movement.
Okay. Well, with a minute or two left, anything that you'd like to say to our listeners, any advice? Some of them are church planners, some of them are involved in active ministry, some of them are just business folks that are trying to follow a life of Christ. Any advice for them?
You know, I guess being asked that, I always try to think back, what were the themes that Jesus highlighted? If somebody asked a question like that, I'd rather speak to what he seemed to highlight. And
mm-hmm.
you know, there's two things I think he always highlighted, and one was to love, and the other was to overcome. And it's interesting that typically he coupled those two together, because there's so many things in our lives that discourage us from loving. And so to stay on mission with him, we have to overcome that discouragement, and we can do that with each other.
Mm-hmm.
As we're in community together, we can do that with him and the embrace that he gives us and the depth of the love that he gives us. That really is very overwhelming. And if we would just stay faithful, man, and when I say love, I don't mean to be in love with the idea of promoting love, because that's something that I think happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of actually loving, he actually, and when I say that, what I mean is being more concerned about life blossoming in the lives of others, abundant life blossoming in the lives of others, no matter what it costs you.
Very good.
I'm fuzzy that I get or the way that I feel, and that's not how Jesus loved. And, you know, I'll say this to you, and you can edit this out if you want, but, you know, I just wrote a book, and I'm still learning what it means to even talk about that. I have to be honest with you, I'm still learning how to be comfortable sharing that, but I guess the guys keep telling me I have to tell people I did that, they would be mad at me if I didn't tell you, so. But I did, and in it, we basically, all I tried to do is take that message God gave us that has seemed to be such an encouragement in our context and put it into stories and words that hopefully can encourage others to live sent. And so for what it's worth, you know, that's there. It's a resource that's available. And if it is something that can bring encouragement into other contexts and those who are being the church, then by all means, I hope that it will. And if not, winters are coming, and so it probably will make good kindling as well.
So, so what's the name of the book?
It's called Live Sent.
Okay.
And the subtitle is You Are a Letter.
You Are a Letter.
And that, is you that get a... it on Amazon or, you know, things like that.
Okay, excellent. Well, Jason, we appreciate you coming on the show. Is there a way that people can get in touch with you if they'd like to email you or Twitter you or anything?
Yeah, you know, my Twitter is at Jason C. Dukes. So, and Dukes is like D as in dog, U-K-E-S, Jason
okay.
C. Dukes. And then my Facebook, same thing, facebook.com/JasonCDukes. And my blog is simple, jasoncdukes.com. And then my email that they can email at is invitingconversation@gmail.com.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to check out that book and maybe give you a call back and talk more about that as well.
But yeah, man, I'd love it. I'd love it. I, like I said, I really hope it'll be an encouragement to people.
Okay. Well, Jason, again, thanks for joining us. As he mentioned, you can find him on Twitter, Jason C. Dukes, or the other links, houseblendcafe.com, restorationconcept.com, reproducingchurches.com, thechurchofwestorange.com, ura.com guy. And then you've got westpointchurch.org. So
That's right.
And also, of course, the site that kind of drew me to you and attracted me to kind of some of the stuff that you were doing to begin with was humanitybeautiful.com. So we'll have links to all of those on our show notes so people can check those out and find out more about you.
Man, I appreciate that. And, yeah, the more we can share about Humanity Beautiful, the better. And also, if people have stories, man, please, because we just want to capture stories on that. So we'd love to do it in quotes or videos or whatever. So please do share about that. That'd be great.
Okay, excellent. Well, again, Jason, thanks so much. I know you've got a busy schedule and appreciate you taking an hour or so to chat with us and join us here on this podcast.
Man, I appreciate you asking, Jonathan. I really like and I appreciate what you do. So thanks for all you do to get that story out as well.
Thanks a lot, man. And we will be in touch.
All right, thanks, buddy.
When the first light brightened the dark, before the breaking of the human heart, there was you and there was me. Innocence was all I knew, 'cause all I had to know was you. We were running underneath the tree.
you have any questions or comments about this show, we do encourage you to drop us a line. You can email us somethingbeautifulpodcast@gmail.com or call our listener line, 972-535-8980, 972-535-8980, or anywhere in the world if you're on Skype, simply Skype J.D. Blundell. And you can find a link to that right on our podcast page at www.somethingbeautifulpodcast.com.
You've been listening to Something Beautiful, part of the Emergent Podcast Network. For more information about this and other great shows, visit us online at www.emergentpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening to the Something Beautiful podcast. Join us again next week at somethingbeautifulpodcast.com.